Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. You'll find all the TWiT shows on your Roku box, Android, and BlackBerry phones, and all Yahoo Widget TVs powered by MediaFly. For more information, visit twit.tv/MediaFly. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 63 for October 6th, 2010. Just this side of creepy. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Reduce costs, improve efficiencies, and help your company's bottom line with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com, offer code TWIG. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to Gazelle.com, bonus code TWIG. And by MailRoute.info, a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Save 10% for the life of your account at MailRoute.info. It's time for TWIG, This Week in Google, the show that covers the latest in the Google and the cloud. And joining us here from the cloud, actually from TNT, Becky Worley is here. She was our reporter at the Logitech event. We'll report in live, because you are live right now.
Right. It's all so confusing. Am I DVR'd? Can someone pause me?
You're recorded. Unpause, Becky. Also here, as usual, Gina Trapani from San Diego. Hello, Gina.
Hi. Good to be here. Excited to talk about Google TV.
Yay. Smarterware.org is her website. And, of course, she writes for Fast Company, does a great Work Smart feature. It's at fastcompany.com/worksmart. Jeff Jarvis back from Frankfurt. You were there last night.
20 hours.
Ay, 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 caramba. And the Ambien didn't work, according to your Twitter.
No, I was really pissed. I was awake. And it's a terrible thing to be, is awake.
Well, are you jet lagged still? Or are you?
No, I'm just stupid.
Okay. I'm not going to say anything. I was going to say something.
I'm eager to talk about Google. We got lots of Facebook news. We got news.
We got a ton of news. And you know who's been covering it from his command center in San Francisco? MG Sigler of TechCrunch.com. Hey. Love MG. We're all big fans of yours, MG.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Good to be here.
And you actually didn't go to any of the events because they were all going on at once. There was a Cisco event, there was a Facebook event, and there was a Logitech event all in the same morning, all in the Bay Area.
Yeah, couldn't pick one to go to, so I kind of watched the stream and the live blogs. We had people at them all, you know, so I was watching live blogs, and I watched the live stream of the Facebook event itself, so...
Well, what we should do is quickly cover the Cisco and Facebook announcements. Since they're quick, there's not a lot to say about them, and we're going to spend a lot more time, I think, with the Google TV Logitech announcement. Start with Facebook, MG. What did Facebook tell us today?
So Facebook, basically, they rolled out a few new features. So one of them, one of the big ones is a data portability type deal, where they're going to allow you to kind of export all your data. Finally, from Facebook itself. And, you know, they're not really disclosing where you can move it to yet, but you'll basically be able to get, you know, a big file dump with all this data in, including your pictures and all that kind of stuff.
That's something we talked about with Backupify that I'm already doing with a third-party service, but Facebook actually, right. I think, wasn't too happy about Backupify. It's nice that they're offering
that. Mean, people have been trying to do this, obviously, for a long time, and there's been a lot of, you know, talk that people want to get this data out of Facebook since everyone is putting so much data into it, and it looks like they're finally doing it. You know, Dave Recordon, it sounds like, is leading this charge. He was the one who talked about it today. And, they're saying all the right things now. We'll see how it's actually implemented.
Kind of makes sense, Dave.
Would you stay there for a second? Mm-hmm. So, and Gina, too, I want to hear. So if I can get my Facebook data, then I presume that this now means that independent app developers can develop independent apps for me to publish and display my data to the web alone or with others in all kinds of new and wacky ways.
That's interesting.
It doesn't, from what I understand, it gets up, you download it as HTML. So it's this big kind of giant HTML package. So that's, I mean, that's not JSON or XML, which is much more machine readable, but it certainly is programmatically readable. So yes, you could do that. It would be nice for it to export to, you know, an XML or JSON file. So that would be a little easier to import.
Do you think that's why they used HTML, is to kind of discourage you from doing stuff with it?
I think they use HTML because it makes sense to a regular user who double clicks on the zip file and clicks on the index.
Oh, and then you get like a browser.
A simplified version that you can look at. So I think that makes sense to the normal user. I think a normal user would look at a bunch of XML files and say, what is this?
Right.
I would love to see, you know, I mean, honestly, the Graph API is fantastic. It exposes all the data via JSON anyway. So developers are getting that, right? So this is really for regular users. And what's cool about this, too, is that you get all the photos that you have been tagged in. It's not just photos that you've uploaded. So,
wow.
So that's really useful. From what I understand, that's true. So I think this is just for regular users who say, I want to back up my Facebook. And this is an easy way to do it. And I think it makes a lot of sense. And I was really, really happy to hear this because this is...
But isn't
this
it more than that,
like
potentially? Imagine making apps out of this?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And because it's HTML, you can read it in. You can make apps out of this. I feel like it signals this sort of cultural shift at Facebook. I mean, this is kind of feels like an about face. I mean, they've always been accused of being kind of this walled garden and your stuff is there and it can't go anywhere else. So I feel like this is a response to diaspora on some some level.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about groups, I think that's a response to the rumors about Google Me. But I also think it's like, oh, this guy, David, you know, was instrumental in building OAuth and OpenID. He's the head of open source at Facebook.
Exactly.
Like we have a lot of Googlers going over to Facebook. I think we're starting to see Facebook start to, you know, show some of the values that we're really used to hearing from Google. So I'm really happy about this.
Really have to thank Dave for this.
I totally agree with that, obviously, but there's also, you know, there's still a little bit of a lot of gray area in what they're going to do with all this stuff. You know, it's like they still have the kind of weird relationship with Twitter and the weird relationship with Google when it comes to actually importing this data. You know, I've heard that they basically want to have deals in place with any company over a certain size in terms of, you know, bringing in just even the friend graph and that. So while I'm sure they'd be okay with people exporting their data and maybe using it, you know, in like some little small startup or doing something like that, if someone tried to, you know, pull this into Google Me or pull this into Twitter, I think that Facebook would still
obviously have a problem. But hold on, MG. Hold on. If I download it and it's now mine, mm-hmm. and you come along and you say, hey, Sailor, put it here and look at the neat things we'll do to it, that's up to me. Otherwise, you know, Facebook can't stop me from doing something with my data once I've downloaded it, which they've enabled.
Yes.
That's true.
So they're not scraping it out of Facebook. They're
right.
getting it from me. And what's cool about that is it goes to the idea of me being the server of my identity.
Well, think about somebody like Tumblr. Tumblr could then say, okay, great. Download your Facebook file.
Right.
Put it on Tumblr. And now you've got your own website with your Facebook content on it.
Which is actually good for Facebook, I think, because
you use it
as an authoring tool for your identity, which goes to what you've been talking about, Leo, in terms of what Google profiles could be, which I think may be part of the reason that they're doing this is because it's also a shot across.
They had to.
Profiles
Definitely.
Before Profiles comes out.
Definitely. At the most basic level, I think that the most basic function of any software program should be I can get out the data that I put in. So as far as I'm concerned, this export my data is like, whatever, 6 years.
Google data liberation front point.
Right.
Right.
Definitely. And what's so interesting is that if you know, The Social Network, the movie, which I did see, you know, if it's true, I mean, this is how Facebook started, right? Zuck went and sucked down all the
right.
photos from all
Open
the different
directories.
Facebooks around Harvard and then created FaceMatch.
He used WGET.
He used WGET, right? But now he's giving everybody the ability to pull down their own pictures, their own data. I think it's a long time in coming and a really good idea. And Jeff's point is right. If you hand over your Facebook zip file to another program, just the way you would export your bookmarks from one browser and import them into another, I can't see how Facebook could argue with that.
That's great news.
I think this is huge news.
Yeah.
I think this is really maybe the most important story of the day because it does change the whole architecture of how we can handle identity. I had lunch by chance this last week with Brett Taylor, who's the CTO at Facebook now. Course, former friend feed,
right,
great,
right.
Nice guy. And what I hear from them is that, you know, they struggle about the way the privacy thing comes out. I was going to write a post about this, but I'll say it here first. I think the positioning for Facebook is that it is a sharing service. You go to Facebook to share. You don't go to Facebook to hide. You go to Facebook to share. And now with groups, which MG, I'm sure, will fill us in on in a second, you can share with a small group. You can share it with the whole world. You can, this all, it's all about control, and this gives us another level of control. And I think what's brilliant about it is that if I do choose to download it all and I do choose to publish it all, I've done that independent of Facebook, and it's no longer Facebook's fault if I broadcast to the world.
So tell us about Google Groups, Becky. What is
Well, I was just going to ask MG because I looked at it.
Google Groups. I'm sorry. Facebook groups.
Yep. You can't help yourself. They're all becoming one. And I just cursorily looked at it, and I don't understand the difference between this groups and the previous groups. MG, can you explain that?
Yeah. Okay. So Groups is the big, you know, consumer-facing feature that they launched today. So it's kind of like creating a new environment within Facebook itself where you can easily add any person that's already in your social graph and just put them in this new group area and share anything with them. You can even, they have a new feature where you can share a doc and kind of edit it. You know, it's very basic, but you
very
can still
privately
do that.
To that group.
Is that based on the docs.com Microsoft solution that they offered a while ago?
No, I don't think so. I think this is just totally an internal thing. It's a very simple document that you can just kind of group edit together if you want. I mean, the thing that this actually most reminds me of is actually Google Wave. I know.
Wouldn't that be awesome if they brought Wave back?
It's kind of like it. It's not, you know, it's not as technologically advanced. There's not all the real-time typing and all that stuff. But, you know, in some ways, this might be, you know, Facebook saying, hey, Google, this is what you should have done with Wave if you really want to make this a collaborative environment type deal.
I'm not seeing it yet. So how is this rolling out?
They're rolling out over the next few weeks, I think. They enabled it for some people today. I got access to it right when the thing went live.
Where would it be?
Press to it.
Where would it be?
It would be under your main tab. It would be in your main tabs on the left-hand side, pretty much right under Friends.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah. I don't have it yet, I guess.
Oh, I think I can add you.
Can you add me? Can you make me a grouper?
I think I can. I'll try that.
I'm on Facebook, my private. I don't know if I'm your buddy yet.
How is this different from lists? I mean, they said during the event that no one wants to make lists, and I agree. No one wants to make lists of friends. This is my softball team. This is my, you know, coworkers.
I think,
but how,
Gina,
how is groups different?
What I sense is that, and Zuckerberg said that to me too, that no one makes like lists. They like to do it only in the process of doing something else. So I think in this case, rather than going in and trying to create a taxonomy of all the friends you already have, you say, oh, gee, I'd like to talk to these five people together as a group. I'll just make them a group.
Okay,
and
so this is a group
out of
chat.
That will come lists.
Yeah, okay. It's really groups. You can do all kinds of things. You can do chat, and you can chat all at once. You can, you know, just you have a wall there where you can still do all the, you know, things you would on a regular profile wall, but now it's just inclusive to your group. It's also interesting that there's three privacy settings for this. So there's hidden, which is completely hidden and completely private. There's private, which is invite only, but people can still search for that group and see who's in it. And then there's completely public, which anyone can join and interact with.
Why name it groups when you already have something called groups that does something different? That doesn't make sense to me.
It's
they
confusing.
Talked about that a little bit. I think Zuckerberg said that they wanted to keep it, you know, as simple as possible. It is a grouping feature, so therefore they called it groups.
Okay. All right. Phew. There is an explanation from Zuckerberg.
To quote the movie, we don't know what it is yet. It's always changing.
How'd you like the movie, Gina?
I enjoyed the movie. It infuriated me at times, but I very much enjoyed it. I also enjoyed reading reviews because I think that people's impression of the movie really reflected what they, you know, like their own issues. Like Nick Denton was quoted as saying that he felt that the, you know, the lesson of the movie was that you have to be a bit of a brute in business, which I think made me laugh. And I think it could be a good quote for you, Jeff, and your is, you know, should, does business need to be evil panel at South by Southwest. But I enjoyed the movie very much. I really related to him. I love that his kind of obsession, you know, obsessiveness with the product and his ambition and the focus. That was something I identified with. They did make him out to seem like a robot, which he isn't.
Did he seem like an evil person, a sociopath?
No, he didn't seem like an evil person.
The interesting thing in the movie is that, and we talked to Dana Brunetti on Net at Night last night. He was the producer for Terror Street, and he said the Fincher decided this, and Mesrick and Aaron Sorkin decided on this almost Rashomon-like. You're looking at the same events from three different perspectives: Marx, Eduardo's, and the Winklevosses. I guess I don't know, and. I think that that actually comes out in the way people see the movie. Everybody I talk to has kind of a different view of whether Mark is bad,
Yes. And it's generational. It's from where you sit. Of course, I was very sensitive to how women were portrayed and sort of, and like summarily dismissed, basically. That one scene in the dorm room where Zuck is kind of handing out responsibilities to the guys, and they say, who are the girls? And, you know, it's like, no one. It's like, you know, what? And then one of them says, what can we do? And he says, nothing. You know, that, I mean, and I felt like that was kind of indicative of how. So, of course, that was annoying. But, you know, people in my theater chuckled at that line because it was so ridiculous, because they were building this sort of caricature of this like robotic nerdy guy. And I enjoyed the movie. I was impressed that the filmmakers made it something entertaining,
it's very accurate technically, which I kind of liked. We talked to Dana about
the WGET.
WGET Perl, HTML, that scene in the computer science classroom where the professor poses what is seems to be an impossible problem and question. And then Zuck leaves, and the professor says, well, I guess you didn't know the answer. And he says, oh, no, and he gives and rattles off the answer. Dana told us that actually the original answer that he rattled off in the script was wrong. They had a consultant on set, and they actually brought everybody back, relit, and shot it so that it would be correct.
Wow.
Good for them.
Yeah, Fincher, apparently, that's his thing. He wants to be actually very correct. And so it's the most
Certain things.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing. It's the most technically correct movie I've ever seen, but it has nothing to do with the factual reality of Facebook. But well, that's okay.
Right. I love Lessig's review.
I did too.
Take on it.
That was one I think was most important.
Absolutely. Me too. Yeah.
And yours, Jeff. But you're very similar. Well, you say similar things.
Well, he had more of a point. He used it as an opportunity to give a lecture on net neutrality.
Yeah.
Or a sermon.
Well, that's Larry.
Yeah, exactly.
That's his thing. And for those who didn't read it, it's in the New Republic, TNR.com. You can read it for free. It's really, he says, it's not a movie review. It's a great movie. But it misses the most important fact of Facebook, which is that no one had to ask permission. That Mark Zuckerberg could create a multi-billion dollar company with half a billion users in 6 years. He didn't ask permission from Harvard, from the internet, from telcos. He only needed $1,000 to start it. And that's the kind of the message of the internet generation is that you don't have to ask permission anymore. You can just do it. And boy, what a great message that is.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so that's Facebook. not only the actual Facebook, but the
what was the third thing, though? There was a third thing.
So it was groups? What was the other thing? Was there
Leo,
more?
Did you get the invite to groups? I sent it to you.
I just asked you to be my buddy.
Yeah, I accepted, and I invited you to this one group
exciting.
That everyone created.
So. All right, so let me see here.
I think, Jeff, the third thing was dashboard.
That's right, new dashboard, which we haven't seen yet. So just yet more privacy control.
What is the dashboard? It's a new way of privacy control, Becky?
That's my understanding, and MG, yes. You're more on this, but that it's a more visual and easier to use privacy setting.
And so the theme of this all today is control, control, control.
Yay, Facebook!
Yeah.
Right, but the problem always is when they in the past, when they gave more controls, it was more confusing. It seemed like less control. So they've gotten that.
What Facebook giveth, Facebook taketh away. The Zuckerberg taketh away. Oh, good. So now I can see the group. So MG invited me to a group of tech writers or bloggers, tech news bloggers and reporters. And so it's an open group. So anybody who has groups can see it. And there's Dan Patterson. There's MG. There's Dwight Silverman. Ed Bott. Well, this is going to be a fun group to be in, actually.
Hey, hook a sister up, man.
Yeah,
yeah,
no
kidding. I was gonna say, invite us.
Yeah, can you invite me?
I like the people in it. No, sorry.
What?
Yeah, it's very exclusive.
Anybody can join it, right, MG? Or it's an open group.
This one, I think, this is the middle tier privacy setting. So I think you have to be invited to join it. But anyone can see who's in it.
See, I'm glad I got back on Facebook. Somebody said, and quite rightly, I understand people are saying it to me on Twitter. What? I'm confused, Leo. You hate Facebook. Now you love Facebook. You're defending Mark Zuckerberg against the evils of the social network. And it's a layered thing. As geeks, I feel like we can criticize Facebook and we could be adamant about it. And we could say this is a bad thing. But when it comes to the outside world, I'm going to defend my geek brother. You know,
it's true.
You know,
I'm actually feeling a lot more the most positive I felt about Facebook in a long time.
Me too.
Partially because of the movie and partially because of these announcements. So, you know, I feel bad for Zuck, I think.
I am. Me too.
Wow. The new twig. No geek on geek violence.
Yes, that's right.
I like it, Leo.
Enough geek on geek violence.
We can't have it.
But they listen. I think the point of this is that Facebook does listen, and you know, in a way, the most important line in the movie, which I'm sure Zuckerberg does in fact, is we don't know what it is yet, it's always changing, and that goes away from the whole industrial age view that you have a product and you stand by it.
That's right.
So he's always been, you know, whether it was the news feed or the ad program or anything, he'll throw it out there. People don't like it. He says, oh, okay, I was wrong here. I was right there. You're wrong there. And he fixes it and changes it. And he rolls with those punches. And that's a whole new way to do things. You know, and again, Google knew that too with betas and forgot that when it came to Buzz. But that's just the way that Facebook operates.
And I think the movie did a really good job of showing how he fed off of the response. Like the more that Facebook grew, the more kind of focused and obsessed he got about it. And I love the way he kind of looked at MySpace and said, that's ugly, and looked at Friendster and said, it's always down, and said, Facebook's going to be clean. It's always going to be up. He controlled his ability to scale by making it exclusive to Harvard. Like, I think he made some really smart decisions. And the more people, he was constantly looking at how many users did he have and iterating and adding more. And I think that that is the true web experience, right? It's that constant feedback and that iterating and that growing as you go versus creating a finished product and then issuing it. So if the movie did anything right, I certainly think that it did a good job of portraying, you know, a smart programmer who's obsessed and who was ready to iterate and ready to listen to his users and go with what they wanted.
And of course, as long as Facebook responds to their criticisms that we pass along about privacy, about settings, and improves and iterates, I have no problem with saying, "Hey, you're doing the right thing. You're going in the right direction."
Right.
I mean, the problem is they had so many privacy setting changes that confuse people over and over again. After a while, it felt like, are they not learning from their mistakes? And today's announcements feel like they're learning from their mistakes.
And I really sense that they struggle with that. I mean, I really, really do. And I don't think it's as simple as just PR. But in a few conversations lately, they really do try to learn from that. And part of it is that they are confused because they have a view of the world that's just not meshing in how they communicate it. And that's what Mark said to me when I sat down with him. I hope you can do a better job of communicating this than we have.
By the way, Jeff Jarvis, you were added to the Facebook group by Robert Walter Scoble.
Yeah. Scoble is always ahead of everyone.
He was there first.
Of course he created the group.
Did he create it? I'm sure. Liking who's in this
group. Of course he did.
Let's pull up the ladder now, though.
Oh, you gangplank bastards.
No girls allowed.
Gina, we're going to make our own treehouse.
Get back here, make your own group.
Oh, okay, I changed my mind. All girls allowed.
Well, I have great groups already.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I just got it.
I'm refreshing my Facebook page like a loser.
Wait a minute. No. How do I add somebody to the page? First of all, I guess you have to be my friend. Anyway, we'll take a break and come back while I add Gina to the Tech News Bloggers group. Oh, you already are my friend.
We are friends.
We are friends. So I'm going to add you to my, somehow add you to this group. Can I do that, MG, or do you have to be some sort of...
Yeah, go in the right-hand column, click on Add Friends to Group. It should be right under all the pictures.
See. Yeah, Add Friends to Group.
It's also interesting that I don't accept or anything. I'm just there.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Some people might have, you know, take issue to that like they do with all Facebook changes, but it's like it is completely opt out. You know, anyone can add you to any group.
And it's only the things that I do at the group that are part of the group. So if I don't ever do anything with them, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I don't see you. Maybe you aren't my friend, Gina. I'm going to have to add you as a friend. Well, I'm a fan. You see, I'm on your fan page, but I don't know your personal. No. So I can't add you, but Becky, I added you.
Oh, thanks, boss.
Because she's my friend. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. We have a Cisco announcement and then Google TV and lots more to talk about. Becky Worley had an early morning demonstration of the Google TV. We've got some video from there and Becky's insights. MG Siegler is here from TechCrunch. It's great to have you, MG. Once again, just love your stuff. Gina Trapani from smarterware.org is also here. And, of course, Jeff Jarvis, buzzmachine.com, and the author of What Would Google Do If It Were on an Overnight Flight from Frankfurt?
It wishes.
It's time, though, for me to mention our friends at Citrix, the makers of the great GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a great solution for anybody who doesn't want to travel. Jeff, one of these days the Germans will get GoToMeeting.
Sell it to the Germans.
And you will not have to go there. You go there like every month, it seems like.
I just passed 100,000 miles.
And let me tell you something. You know, American Express did a survey.
Rather be on GoToMeeting. I can tell you that for sure.
Oh, yeah. They looked at the costs of business travel, and it's about $1,000 for each trip. That includes airfare, hotel, taxis, and all that. You really, this is a great way to cut costs, be more efficient, work more efficiently, be improved processes, save money by reducing travel, improve communications with the people you work with, help you work smarter and be more efficient. Go to meeting. There are other online meeting solutions. I know. You can try them all. Please do. And here's a 30-day code to try GoToMeeting, and I guarantee you, you will come back to GoToMeeting. It's the best for product reviews, sales presentations, training sessions, collaboration sessions, turning conference calls into boring audio presentations to something exciting, engaging, and functional. 30 days free. GoToMeeting.com/twig. GoToMeeting.com. Now they're saying offer code twig. So if they ask you for an offer code, just use 2TWIG in there. I'm confused. GoToMeeting.com/twig or offer code twig. Either way, 30 days free of simply the best, most secure, fastest online meeting solution. We thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Google and invite you to try, please, GoToMeeting. Very briefly, Citrix announced the new Uma Thurman phone. What is it? UMI?
Maybe Cisco.
The Cisco UMO?
Cisco UMO.
Cisco.
Cisco UMO.
They said it
Cisco
sounds
for men.
Like you,
Uma,
me.
Oprah. Oprah, Uma.
Oprah, Uma. Oprah, Uma.
You, me.
You. Oh, I get it.
You
and me. Is there an umlaut involved at all?
No double dots.
Huh. How's it spelled, you, me?
U-M-I. Kara Swisher said it sounded like bad sushi she wouldn't eat.
Umi. Umi.
But the other thing that's weird about it, and this was Jim Lauterbach pointing this out in a tweet, saying they're calling it actually the Yumi Telepresence. So, really geeky name for a super consumer-y product.
Yeah.
But not at a consumer price.
Right. $600. Right.
$600.
And this is video conferencing for your HDTV.
So it's, okay, so now we saw Skype offer this at CES, Skype TV. Much less expensive. Mm-hmm. Cisco's...
You, me.
Okay. Is a Umai. Camera... Uma, it looks like... Well, oh, I see it's got a bar Umi. Over the U, so it's a long...
Umi.
It's,
okay.
They told me it was Yumi.
No, it is Yumi because it's a long, long U. Right. I understand.
It's a camera and a console.
Okay.
And they say it dynamically adjusts to lighting conditions in your room. It's full HD. It adjusts to the size of the room for sound purposes. It prioritizes the video conferencing. And this is the part that's unbelievable. $600 plus $24 a month.
What? A monthly fee?
$25. Now, that could be subsidized if you perhaps ran it through Verizon Fios or through Comcast. And then they're going to, as I said, prioritize some channels. But it just...
That sounds like they
me?
Think this is going to replace your phone service. Like, you won't pay for your telco. You'll just use UMI. UMI.
Nuts. Nuts. Huh.
It does have a video voicemail. That's kind of cool.
It also has interoperability because you can use it with somebody else who has Google Chat.
Ah.
So I can use...
Because I think, you know, most of the people, everybody listening to this show either uses Skype or Google Voice and Google Chat, which allows you to...
The big question for this show is whether or not it could improve the quality of this horrible, grainy, pinkish version of BUC.
Well, you know, we are going to buy a unit and just see.
My theory on that, Jeff, is it fundamentally comes down to the glass and the cameras. They've put out all these HD cameras. They've changed the connections. But if they're these tiny little eyeballs that have crappy glass, you're going to have a crappy signal.
Well, it does tie into the Logitech announcement because they also announced a camera using Carl Zeiss lenses. Logitech actually does excellent cameras for Skype. Their C150, which is $60, is a very nice camera. Mm-hmm. So somebody has decided. It's funny how the industry all moves like a school of fish. Somebody has decided, short of absent any evidence in favor, that everybody now wants to sit in front of their TV and talk to mom and dad. This is what everybody wants to do.
And not only the Cisco announcement, but I don't know if this one, it's kind of sneaked by the other day, but the T-Mobile My Touch that they announced has a front-facing camera, and it has phone-to-laptop video conferencing. And that's one of the first ones that's doing that.
So it's like FaceTime, but with standards.
Yeah, and right. it's again interoperable, and I think that's been the barrier up until now is that FaceTime. Where are these APIs Steve Jobs promised that are going to supposedly open this up? So now, if video conferencing is, as you said, really moving forward for the whole industry, then that's the, in my opinion, the thing that's going to open it up. So the fact that it works with Google, with the Google Voice and Google Chat, is actually a good thing for the Cisco Yumi.
Is the price a non-starter? I think it is.
Complete.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
No, nobody's going to do this.
What's expensive in that box? I mean, the lens, yeah, the glass, but how expensive can it be?
Unless there's some super secret sauce. But see, even consumers don't say, oh, this looks so much better than the $25 solution. That's
or oh, Grandma, price. I can see all of your wrinkles.
Yeah. So now one thing that didn't sound so hot in the demo of the Google TV was the audio. And maybe they're using expensive Array mics to get a better audio. Because, you know, I'll tell you what, if you're sitting 10 feet away from the microphone in a big room, you're just going to sound awful.
Which demo is this? The
Logitech Google TV demo. They did demo it, and at least Engadget said, oh, it sounds terrible.
I think that's ultimately going to be the impediment for this living room, lean-back Skype situation.
Everybody's going to have lapel mics.
I mean, what are you going to have, a shotgun to a mic, a directional? Yeah.
Well, you could get, there are mics that, in theory, could give you good results from 10 feet away. I don't know what.
It's, again, it's going to have to be directional, right?
Maybe that's what's so expensive.
I would say.
Grandma, move a little to the left. I can hardly hear you.
What is it? You're...
yeah.
Oh, Sonny, you're so...
As a TV producer, I can tell you that people will always forgive you bad video. They will never forgive you
funny?
Bad audio.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. And certainly we spend a lot of money. And one of the reasons our attractive video has these ginormous microphones in here is because we want good sound. And we sent Gina and Jeff $600... microphones so that they look and sound good. Those are very expensive Countryman microphones.
Yes.
And they do sound good, but, you know, I don't know. I could see, I would, you know, well, we will, look, we're going to have to buy one just because if it's better, we'll use it. Mm. But, so we'll let you know. We'll do a demo of that. Now, let's talk to about the meat of the matter, which is Logitech also had an event in San Francisco today to show their new Logitech Review, which is their Google TV device. Becky Worley couldn't be there for the event, so she snuck in early and got a little demo from, was it from Google or from Logitech?
It was from Logitech. And it was great to see it in action. And the idea here is this is the set-top box or the box that's going to sit between your devices and your TV and put the Google UI on your TV.
So they have a big keyboard, which looks like a standard size keyboard.
Wireless via RF, so it's not line of sight. And that connects up via HDMI to your TV and the cable box or whatever your main video
source keyboard,
is.
The keyboard is RF, but there's a set-top box that has in and out HDMI. The in comes from your cable box, and the out goes to your TV. So it's kind of interposing itself between your TV and your source.
Right, and obviously, what it does is it consolidates all of your content, as we've seen with the Google TV UI, and it brings information from the web. You can see, you can search for something, and it'll give you results from the web.
So
from
here,
YouTube.
He searched for Top Gear. He's got YouTube. He's got stored stuff on the DVR. That requires a dish DVR.
Right. It doesn't search your DVR if you don't have a dish.
It also searches programming listings, so you can see BBC America will have it today at 3. So all of those showed up, and I presume you could set a DVR, if you had the dish DVR, set a DVR recording, playback DVR recording. Or now, can you watch YouTube on this?
Yes, you can.
Oh, what a surprise. Is that a Google product? I think it is.
It also has picture-in-picture, and so you can watch in the small window while you watch YouTube videos or
you can tweet
apps like Twitter or any of the built-in apps.
I'm scanning through this here. So it's got Pandora. It's got Netflix, although the Netflix interface is not the most recent Netflix interface. It's the old Roku version 1 interface.
It's got the Amazon Video on Demand.
I like that. Got to have that.
And, you know, my postulation after seeing this is the problem, and I go back to what Steve Jobs said when he was asked at D8 about Apple TV. He said the problem with set-top boxes and getting involved in TV is a go-to-market problem. People are not conditioned to buy set-top boxes. They presume that they'll be subsidized by the cable company or by your provider. And so people won't shell out money for that. But when I asked Logitech about that, they said, you know what? Our most popular universal remote, the Harmony One, costs $150. That's really the starting point for them. They go up to $500, and they think that the sweet spot is about $250. And guess what? That's what this box and this keyboard cost, $299, and then you can get it subsidized if you get it with Dish. But the point is, they're selling this as a remote with some Google stuff on it.
Although, there's a free iPhone and Android app that is pretty sophisticated. In fact, if I skip ahead a little bit in your video...
Do I get to get past all this keyboard stuff and just use my phone?
Yes, or my tablet? Then you still need to buy
the... Those things look like a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not into the keyboard, and I mean, did we not see this?
Well, it reminds me of Web TV.
Web TV.
It looks a lot like Web TV. But wait a minute. Now, here, Jeff, watch this. This is the Android interface, which is...
Let me actually... Before I talk about the application on this,
he's
let me
holding
actually show
a Sprint
you some pretty
Evo.
Cool things. So let's say, you know, somebody else is watching TV and I am, you know, browsing YouTube and I find a video that I want to share.
On your phone.
So all I'm going to do is press this video and I want to share it.
So this is the standard Android interface.
And then I'm
you see
the
all
option,
the sharing
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I want to share yeah, my Harmony.
There's Harmony as one of the sharing items.
This is cool.
It's now... So going to the TV. Say, is this a full browser?
Effectively, that same
looks
video.
Like a full browser.
Like
yeah.
Showing up on my TV screen.
Should it looks be. Like just regular YouTube. That's awesome.
That is.
So he sent basically a YouTube page to his TV, kind of like a Chrome to a phone.
It's basically like flicking it to your TV. And if your TV's off and your components, like your receiver, are off, if you do that, it'll turn all of your devices on. So I thought that was kind of
That's
unique.
Interesting. So it knows about your devices because it's a Harmony remote,
it's a
basically.
Remote.
Now, that's a free app.
The app has to be in conjunction with the Logitech Review box.
So you spend the $299 on the box. Now you can control it. Now, this is Android, and they said iPhone, too, right?
You saw that on the web. I didn't ask him about that, but
yeah
he did.
Well, they may not, you know, and they have to get through Apple's approval process.
Well, let me ask two questions. First... Is there one winner for me? So in the end of the day,
no.
I have the Roku box now.
No.
I have not yet opened up my Apple TV box. And now there's this. Is there any reason to use more than one? Because of the deals they've done with programmers? Because of what?
Why wouldn't I use this if it has Netflix,
$299.
Amazon?
Well, okay. It doesn't have ABC, NBC, CBS.
No, but I keep my... But the way it is right now... I see what you're saying. So one content provider. So that I've just
right, well,
got
that's what I'm
the
trying to say. Is there
it's
any
not
reason
a
to
la carte
this?
Yet. You yeah. can't do a la carte
no,
yet.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
no, but
Google,
I'm still
the way Google positioning this is pretty smart because they're unlike Apple TV and unlike the Roku box and unlike, you know, the upcoming Boxy box, they're making it as an add-on to what you already have. So like if you have, especially with Dish Network, which they have a nice deal with, but even if you just have a regular cable provider, because of the HD in and out, you basically make this as an intermediary device, kind of like, you know, you used to do a TiVo back in the day or whatnot. And so this is their like kind of stepping stone because I think they realize that people aren't quite ready yet to move to just having, you know, killing cable and just having whatever content is from the internet on YouTube and Netflix and whatnot. So this is kind of a smart position for them, I think.
Okay, so here's my next question. So I have, you know, I'm wacky. I may have all three of those boxes or four of those boxes because I'm doing this. But I may have more than one plus, you know, a cable box plus a DVR plus something else. And this thing has one HDMI in it. Do I now need to get an HDMI switcher?
If you're going to have all those anyway, you want an AV receiver.
Oy.
They actually showed you an AV receiver, Becky. I saw that in the bottom.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah. So I think the ideal way that this would work is with this Dish Pro, you know, with the Dish network built into it, because that's the way
it's great for
currently
Dish.
Set up.
Let me show you one other thing. Now, you have to tell me if this is what I think, if I'm looking at what I think I'm looking at. So this is the Android application.
Mm-hmm.
He's pointing it at the TV.
It
says watch Google TV. And right up here on the TV set, which is turning on now because it's going
to
come on.
Yeah,
get me to the right input.
It's 1080p.
Yeah, I asked him about that specifically.
It's 1080p. That's big. Apple's 720p. The Roku box promises 1080p but is not yet 1080p. That's big. I think that's more important than maybe people would recognize. You're now going to have high def quality video on here.
Yeah. No, I specifically asked him. He said absolutely 1080p.
That's something Apple can't do right now.
Mm.
Roku can't do right now.
Mm.
So do I return my Apple TV before I open it?
No. Now, let's talk about what it can do. So the Apple TV, this is what you're going to, I think we are still in this crazy Tower of Babel world. because you're going to need a big form with checkboxes in it. Apple TV does two things: iTunes and Netflix. That's it. Roku box, doesn't do iTunes, but does do Netflix, Amazon, bunch of channels, including Twit. You can watch news shows on it. In fact, anything that's a podcast, you can watch on it. Oh, with the iTunes, I guess if it's a podcast, you could go through the podcast interface. Then Google TV, which has pretty much the same partners as the Roku. They said Hulu is being blocked, but they're negotiating with Hulu. It sounds like Google TV is likely to have the largest set of additional partners, including HBO as a partner on there.
Yeah, this is an issue of really making deals and who has the power of collusion is maybe a strong word, but the power to get everybody together on this. And it may take a Google to do it. It certainly doesn't seem like Roku or, you know, one of the other hardware makers has been able to push the tides in one direction.
I would have said Roku was the leader on this, but I'm starting to think now that this Google is kind of going to move ahead.
Well, they also have an app with, a deal with CBS, an app. Is what Molly Wood said.
Interesting. The marketplace is not yet on it. They say soon in 2011 to the market, Google Marketplace, which means you can add apps. Mm. Okay, but two negatives, two big, glaring negatives. One, $2.99. Apple TV's $99, Roku's $99 or less.
Expect a subsidy. I bet it'll come down to $149. I think the price point has to be under $150.
I agree. $150 is a sweet spot. Two, it's complex as hell. Yeah. This is what Apple's selling is, well, Steve says, you don't want a computer, you want a TV.
And if I can go back to that remote issue, that's the only way that they can get people to program
remote.
It. But see, people already have to do that. That's the problem facing the living room right now for the consumer.
Oh, yeah, my wife hates me because she says, I can't watch TV.
Yeah.
I just want to watch TV.
That's where I think it's not one UI to rule them all. It's just give me one freaking remote to rule them all.
Yeah, but I don't want the remote to be 6 feet wide.
True. Well, you can use your phone.
It's a damn surfboard.
I think it has to be the phone. I mean, the Apple TV also interacts with the phone. It's so much better than, you know, the Apple TV remote is, which is that little undersized thing, which looks great. But, is, you know, it's like hard, it's really hard to type anything on, obviously. So this thing would be great for typing on. But who wants to have a keyboard sitting on their, you know, coffee table?
Can you assume that everybody have a smartphone, Android? Or Apple phone that will work with these things? I mean, can they just say, well, look, that's the universe?
Yeah, except that so I'm the dad and I have the phone and I'm out of the room.
Right.
And somebody else is in the
room.
You have
to leave your phone on the coffee table.
That's ridiculous.
I'm guessing, and I don't have confirmation on this, but based on the way that Logitech's projects work, I'm guessing that all of their Harmony remotes will control the review box. At least you may not have QWERTY input, but it'll at least allow you to change channel, go to the guide, and do some of the basic directional functions.
You know what? I like the idea of maybe an iPad that I leave on.
Right. The iPad controls the Apple TV. They just released that app like last week or whatever. And, you know, soon the Android tablets will be able to, or Google OS or Chrome OS,
That's Google's, a $500 minimum, $500 remote control.
Yeah.
Yes.
Google's other specialty these days is voice.
They showed that off, Jeff. I'm glad you mentioned it.
They did.
And unfortunately, I didn't get it on tape.
Instead of you, me, it's Gumi. Gummy?
Gumi interface. No, he basically said Price is Right into his Android phone by hitting the Google Voice Actions button, and it pulled it right up on the Google TV.
It's got dictate, but so you can dictate, and it looked like it did a pretty good job with the demos I saw. Like you would literally, it would say, and we've seen the Google phones now do a very good job, I think.
Yeah, especially when they're cross-referencing a database that's a known universe.
Price is Right.
Right.
It's going to be, you know, there's a much more constrained possibilities.
Yeah. It's Star Trek time.
And it has an available camera. It has all those additional features which work with Google Chat. Mm-hmm. So you don't need, I think Yumi is kind of the loser in this one, the Cisco Yumi. For $299, I guess you have to buy the camera, which is another $150, I think, something like that, from Google. They had the whole price. You know, you can go to the website. Logitech put this all up ahead of time.
But because it's an ecosystem, there's nothing to say that there couldn't be some future consolidation. What about the front-facing camera in your Android phone being the camera you use to talk to grandma and you see her on the set?
Oh, and now I'm holding a microphone and camera right next to me.
Yeah.
I think the real weakness of this Logitech box is actually the fact that Google TV is a platform. You know, it's not one box in particular. So soon, in the next couple months or whatever, it's going to be built into Sony TVs. It's going to be built into Sony Blu-ray players. So why do you buy this $299, even if it's subsidized, why do you buy this $150 box when you can either get it in a new TV or get it in a Blu-ray player?
I think
or get it in your Android phone.
That's exactly right, Jeff. Yeah. They're going to market apps that are much more expensive that will control your Sony TV, that will be Logitech branded, that are Android apps that will run all of your other devices.
What other manufacturers, Becky, are announced to be making Google TV boxes?
Sony has an announcement next week. That's the only one I know for sure.
At the Google I/O conference, they announced Sony, Dish, and Logitech. Those are the three players.
Right.
And then president of Best Buy was there to accept bribes from all three.
Well, I think Samsung's going to be in a hell of a place because they have their own app store, and they are going to end up having to make a tough call. They put a ton of R&D money into that already, and if they're not going to accept the Google TV UI, they're going to be out on a limb, and I wouldn't want to be making that decision.
Well, the Amazon app marketplace also makes sense now.
Because it's so ubiquitous?
Well, Amazon's a brand we know, and Amazon can get you to get to all of their entertainment through their app marketplace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
on these devices.
So that's an interesting. But what you don't want is more fragmentation, and that's really one of the things we're really headed towards is more fragmentation.
Well, the Geek Squad wins out big on this one.
Oh, man, just the installers are going to go crazy. Now you
their
can.
Little, their little black ties are just twirling right now.
Oh, I'm so excited. So it's job security.
So $299.99, you can order it now. When are they going to have it available?
End of October. It's pre-orders now at Logitech and I believe at Best Buy.
Okay, Leo.
I ordered it already.
Wife lets you buy one thing, one thing.
Let's see. My wife doesn't. That's the problem. Okay, go ahead, Jeff. I understand. But this is a hypothetical.
Yeah. What are you buying? People are going to come to you and say, Leo, what do I do? Apple TV, Roku, Boxy, this.
I really like the simplicity of Roku. I think Roku beats Apple TV, at least for me right now. But I have to say, I think the potential is here for Google TV. I love, you know, the thing that Apple TV didn't do that I was disappointed was have apps. Now, I suspect we haven't heard the end of that one. I think there's 8 gigs of storage on that Apple TV. We already know you can install apps. There's just no app launcher. It's a simple firmware button to push for Apple to make apps on this thing.
And at first, your apps are probably resident on your iPad, then go through Apple TV.
Well, apparently there is some facility to do that.
That's another way to go.
I'm glad I don't have to choose, Jeff, to be honest. It's not. I don't think there's a clear winner here yet.
But I think it's a good question, Jeff, because I feel like I'm going to have to make this decision advising on Good Morning America. Like, okay, America, if you got to buy one thing for holiday. And what I will say is I feel like we're back to the format wars. And so in the transition space, while they're fought, I actually think this Google TV Logitech device is the best consumer choice because it solves two problems. One, it's an all-in-one streaming solution that may very well be future-proofed enough to take us into the next 3-4 years. Secondarily, it solves the universal remote problem. And I think that if it can consolidate those two issues, it's worth the investment, especially if it's subsidized by your satellite or cable provider.
Right. Look at this. It's got two USB ports in the back, which, unlike Apple USB port, actually does something. You can hook a camera up to it, among other things. Mm-hmm. IR blaster support, HDMI. Yeah, this is what's interesting is it's also a big win for Logitech's Harmony line, which we've said for a long time is absolutely the best remote control system out there.
There is no doubt it's the best. It's still too hard for the average consumer.
Yes.
Right. I agree.
Ugh.
This is the power nerd's choice.
Becky, you're right. It's the decade of the blinking 12. Right?
We're back to that. No.
VCRs didn't figure out early on how to listen to a signal to get the time and just put the damn time in.
Right.
And how many years did it take for the consumer electronics industry to get there?
And in every household, there's only one person who knows how to program the damn thing, and it's like a ball and chain.
Right. Because you're the one person, I take it.
That would be.
Have you guys seen the Sony Google TV remote that I think Engadget had pictures of
the
yesterday?
The ugliest thing I've ever seen in
this
life.
Looks 1,000 times better. This Logitech
it's
remote looks
so
much
Sony,
much
isn't it?
Sony, it's baloney. This looks like something, well, it looks like a remote control vehicle controller. I mean, it's crazy.
You've got that AR drone flying around you. You've got some sort of plane that it's controlling while you're watching TV.
What, Gina?
They thought like functional designers rather than consumers. You know, put that in there. Put that in there. And it's all in there. You can't
use
anything.
The keyboard looks a little Kindle One-ish to me.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly it. They took some sort of a gaming console controller and they glued it to the Kindle One bottom half.
Ew.
Exactly what it is.
Ew.
Yeah.
Poor Sony.
Yeah, I think Sony's kind of out in the cold on this one, to be honest with you. But every TV manufacturer is going to put something like this into their TV. And that's the other problem is that I don't think consumers, if they have a TV that does something, are going to buy something else. So now you've really got a fragmentation of the market.
What you have to have, I think Becky's on the point here, you have to have some hub controller for all your stuff.
Well, you don't, though, if you get a TV with Yahoo widgets or you get a TV with the Samsung tools. That's the same.
Right, but you're also going to still have a DVD player for a year or two. You're going to have.
But those are fade. I do believe those will fade away. Maybe even, I mean, one can hope the cable box.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's where I think that the hump is now. The exhaustion of hooking up one more thing is too much to bear.
I agree.
So you buy the TV with it installed.
That's what I'm saying is.
Yeah. Okay.
If you buy a TV and it's got this stuff, you're not going to, I don't care if something has better features, you're done.
Yeah.
So we're going to have this very fragmented market. Now, who this benefits, I think, is people like Netflix and Hulu, because they're going to be in the driver's seat. Everybody's going to have to everybody is now calling on Hulu, right, MG? And saying, okay, please let us have Hulu.
Yeah, Hulu is the one, they're kind of, you know, everyone is after them right now because that's a big differentiating factor. Everyone, it seems like, has Netflix. I mean, all of these things we talked about, Netflix.
Netflix turned out to be too easy. Hulu did the right thing. Yeah. They held out.
I think one big differentiating factor that's, you know, going to come into play, and you hit on it a little bit, Leo, but if Apple launches apps for this, and we already know that Google is going to launch apps for, you know, the Logitech box and all the different Google TV platforms, you know, a lot of people might end up buying these set-top boxes just to get apps. The wild card there is how you actually control these apps. You know, do you use an iPad to do it? I mean, can you imagine using that keyboard thing to try and play a game on, you know, on your TV? Right. Do you have to have another remote then to do that? But I think that will be really interesting in the next 6 months to a year to see how that kind of comes into play.
Stories today are that Apple TV is selling so well they can't keep it in stock in some Apple stores. It is a hit out of the box already, with as many as 1 million units sold already. So they may just have the momentum, and if they can pull in apps, maybe they can win that way. I love this battle, by the way. First of all, it's great for us because we got something to talk about. Press loves horse races, right? And we got an 18-player horse race here. But it also is good, I think, for consumers in the long run because the competition, I know it's confusing initially, but the competition will, I think, wring itself out and we will get a low-price good solution eventually out of all this. I hope we do. I mean, this is where we're headed. We're heading towards streaming content, period. There's no doubt about that. It's also very good for people like me. And TechCrunch TV and anybody and Fast Company, because as internet content providers, we're suddenly at parity with NBC, CBS, and ABC.
So, by the way, have you done deals with Google TV and Boxy and all these guys? Just Roku?
Yeah, I don't know.
What does it take for you? You should just be there.
I think
why is a deal even necessary?
I'll tell you, on the Apple TV, you plug it in, you go to the podcast section, we're featured, all of our shows are there, it's very easy to play them. We are on the Roku box because our partner MediaFly's made deals with Popcorn Hour, Roku box, and Yahoo. There is a Boxy content plug-in, I believe, so we will be on the Boxy box at ship. That's a third-party content plug-in. I don't know if we even need to do anything for Google TV. You speak into your phone, you say, this week in Google, and presumably it would pop up and you'd play it.
Either listen or your Twit app, right? I mean,
There is a Twit app for Android.
Yeah,
that's true.
So we have apps on all the platforms. So I think that anybody wants to play in this space, it's really a very low barrier to entry. I don't think you need to do much. And that's where the search. See, Google's smart because you don't need to curate. You just allow people to search.
Ah, so but there, then there's the question. Where does Facebook play in this?
It always comes down to Zuckerberg. Everything comes down to Zuckerberg.
I asked about that in the Google TV, and they said you just go to it in the browser, that they're not, they didn't talk about
it.
They
have a full browser.
Yeah, but I think it's reverse, Becky. I think that the powerful thing here is the social search. I've been arguing in one of my really boring PowerPoint slides that there's new spheres of discovery of content, right? So brand used to be it. That's what the way media still thinks, is we go to the programmer's schedule, we buy the magazine, we buy the newspaper.
Right.
That's what, right? Search reversed that. We ask the question. If you got an answer, you're there. If you're not, you don't exist. The more powerful force that comes along is, of course, the human links.
Oh, imagine instead of living in Google TV, you live in Facebook TV.
Bingo.
Where, you know, that group that you just started, MG, if it's a group of my friends and I can see who's watching what, we could be discussing True Blood while we're watching True Blood. I think that's very
powerful.
That's
where it all goes. That's where it takes
off. It's kind of interesting. The guy who's leading Facebook groups is the same guy who created Hot Potato. You know, Facebook acquired them. And that was kind of one of their thing that they were doing. You know, you could check into watching a television show and have conversations about it. So that's kind of interesting.
I think that's so key for both discovery and socialization of the event, and for creating things that are social. It all starts to come together. The stat that I throw out regularly is that Schmidt says that Google causes 4 billion clicks a month to publishers. Bitly passed that mark a few months ago.
Oh, that's interesting.
Apples to kumquats. I admit it's not all the publishers, but you consider Bitly is only a fraction of Twitter, and Twitter is a fraction the size of Facebook. So the human links become the primary means of media discovery in the future. It's not brands, it's not curators, it's not search. Though each of those will still live and have a major important point, but the market share is going to go more and more and more to human links. Peer links, interaction, or in analyzing what we're talking about and seeing heat there. It's a John Henry moment where the humans win.
I like that. Becky Worley is going to leave us. She has to get ready for TNT Tech News Today. It's coming up in about 20 minutes. So, Becky, thank you for your coverage of this event. We're glad we could get your video. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Becky Worley reports for Good Morning America for ABC News and is, of course, a regular on the Twit Network as part of our Tech News Today.
Bye, Becky.
Bye,
good
guys.
To see you.
Thank
and
you.
Is the executive producer of Twit. While Becky repositions, is that what it's called, repositioning? I don't know what that's called. We're repositioning Becky for her next gig. I'm going to quickly take a look at our sponsor, Gazelle. They do a great job, if you've ever seen Gazelle, at helping you get rid of the gadgets you're done with. Gosh knows there's plenty of gadgets in our lives today and plenty more that we don't need. You could recycle them, you could give them to friends, you could sell them, you could try to sell them on eBay, or you could gazelle them. Don't sell them, gazelle them! It's the easy way to get cash for your gadgets. Got an iPhone 3 you ready to get rid of so you can buy the iPhone 4? Let's just put in the iPhone 3GS. You just put it in the search bar here. And you say, let's say I have a 32 gig 3GS. Does it make a call? Yes. Free of water damage? Yes. Perfect condition. I have all the cables because I am that kind of guy, and it is worth $222. Now, here's what happens. Gazelle sends you a box with a return mail label. You throw that in and anything else you want. The Gazelle experts go over it, make sure it matches your specs, remove all your personal data, and then they send you a check. It's that easy, and you're already there to buy in that next iPhone, the iPhone 4. Gazelle.com. Lots of other reasons to love Gazelle. For instance, some of your gadgets, let's face it, have no value at all. Gazelle does recycling. Their Gazelle Recycle Network is made up of responsible recyclers, folks who don't do landfill. They don't use child labor or prisoner labor. They take care of your stuff. They're approved by the EPA. Gazelle recycles for you as well. One more reason to love Gazelle. If you've got a charitable cause, a school group that you need to fund, you don't have to have a bake sale. Have a Gazelle gadget drive. They will create a personalized gadget drive webpage for you. You send your donors to the page. They send their gadgets to Gazelle. You get the money. Easier than a bake sale and more rewarding, less expensive than having an event. I love Gazelle. Lots of people have used it. We've used it all many times now to get money for. We got a lot of stuff lying around the cottage. Go to gazelle.com. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. If you use the special code TWIG, after you've got all your items put together, you get a 5% bonus payment on your used gadgets. You can also get cash or get an Amazon card. They have other ways that you can get more money back for your gadgets. I really love Gazelle. G-A-Z-E.
I gotta do this.
It's so great.
Yeah,
I have so much stuff sitting around. I gotta do this.
We all do, right? And you know,
my wife's gonna go through every closet I have and just send it all without my permission.
Well, she should. And you know, you get this one box and you throw it all in the box and you send it to them and they just send you a check. It couldn't be easier. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. We thank them for their support of this week.
I'll have to stop her from sending my Newton in.
No, you're not getting my Newton. You know, I don't think it's worth anything anyway. Let me just see. Out of curiosity. N-E-W-T-O-N. It's kind of fun. Just go to the webpage and play with it. Newton message pad 2100. Let's see what that's worth. That's just the one I got. Power's on, free of water damage. It is in perfect condition because I never used it. AC adapter, rechargeable battery. I don't even know what this stuff is, but yeah, let's say I have everything. It is worth $81. I'm kind of surprised. Hey, that's pretty good. And there's this graph at the bottom that shows you has the value. For some reason, in August, the value of the Newton went up. Wow, $87 for some reason, the projected price, and then it dropped again. But get it before it, because it's projected to drop to $3. Next month. So if you do have a Newton and you don't want it, sell it now. I love this. I'm not sure how that works, but that's so cool. They have price history, today's price, and projected price. Anyway, enough of that. You're watching Twig. MG Siegler is the heavy breather in the background there from TechCrunch.
Is that me?
I think it's you. Just move your headset down or up or something.
Or calm down, MG. Just calm down.
He's so excited.
I'm bothered by these Google TV products.
He's from TechCrunch, and we love him. TechCrunch.com. Also here, the great Jeff Jarvis back from traveling around the world. He's got his eyes propped open with toothpicks right now. His website, BuzzMachine.com. He's also the author of What Would Google Do? A great book if you're interested in what Google's up to. And a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. Gina Trapani is also here from her home. Maybe that's you breathing heavily.
No, is it? Uh-oh. Usually I'm the heavy breather, so, you know.
Your blog is smarterware.org and fastcompany.com/worksmart. Let's see. I guess we could talk about other stuff. Are we done? Any last thoughts?
We got seven new Android phones from...
Unbelievable. Now, we're going to be doing a live broadcast from CTIA in San Francisco. Start at 7:30, and we will be showing you all the new phones at CTIA.
Oh, good.
Unbelievable array, including awesome. The Droid Pro, which somehow Motorola kept secret for the longest time. It's for the obviously for the BlackBerry fan.
Right.
Weren't there some numbers published about Android this week?
That's my number of the week, Gina.
Oh, sorry.
We don't mention numbers around here.
You like the Droid Pro? That looks just like a torch to me. That's a Motorola device. BlackBerry focused.
Going to be Verizon, I think.
Yeah. AT&T had three new Droid devices. I mean, if I'm Apple, I'm going, okay. You know, it reminds me so much, and I've said this before, it's no great insight, so much of the PC versus Mac wars, really where you could buy a PC from 8,000 manufacturers, configure any way you want, and you can get an Apple from Apple, exactly the way Apple configures it.
Because Apple sells hardware, and
did
Google
you guys
sells
see
the...
It broke a couple hours ago, I think. Wall Street Journal has a story that looks suspiciously like it was leaked by Apple that the Verizon iPhone is definitely coming at the beginning of next year.
Yeah, the Journal seems to be Apple's a place of choice for leaking information.
Well, it helps when Steve Jobs takes his helicopter to Rupert's retreats.
And his hat. Did he wear his funny hat?
I don't know.
Strange top hat that he was wearing. Yeah, so Verizon will get the iPhone. I mean, if it's Apple, at this point, I think we can say that Android is putting so much pressure on Apple.
Right, I think the timing of this potential leak, you know, whether it is or not, but is directly correlated to some of the news that came out today, which I think Jeff is going to talk to.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Yes. I like the array of names for the new Motorola phones. You've got the Bravo, the Citrus, the Defy, the Droid Pro, the Flip Out, the Flip Side, and the Spice. I'm surprised they don't have a Poshy. Or
it sounds
a,
like the Village People.
Sporty, yeah. Sounds like the Spice Girls.
Or the Posh, yeah, the Poshy, right. Better Posh, yes.
Bravo Spice, Citrus Spice, Defy Spice, Droid Pro Spice, Flip Out Spice, Flip Side Spice, and Spice Spice.
None of them can sing.
They don't need to. 7 Android phones, 3 Bluetooth accessories, and that's just Motorola. Boy, you know, didn't Motorola a few years ago say we're getting out of the cell phone business entirely? I'm pretty sure they said that. And, well, they're back, baby. Did HTC also announce a bunch of phones? I'm sure they did. It's kind of stunning. It's an onslaught. Skype for Android is out. I installed it immediately. Now, those of you with the Android phones on Verizon already had Skype Mobile. But for those of you who are Android users not on Verizon, now you can make phone calls via Skype on Wi-Fi or 3G absolutely free if you're calling another Skype client, and very inexpensive as usual for the Skype out to phones.
Long time in coming.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is there any reason why I would use that instead of Google Voice, which does kind of the same thing?
You got the transcribed voicemail and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, the Google Voice has more functionality. On the other hand, if I'm calling a Skype caller, I mean, it's good to have that.
Right.
Right, right. And Google Voice does use the a proper phone line, right? And Skype is just
minutes.
Data?
It counts towards your minutes. Still,
oh, it does. Right? That's right. Yeah. Okay, there you go. That's a compelling reason. This does not count towards your minutes.
And it works well. It's good. What you need a strong 3G connection. And there's no skippiness or echoing. It's been good for you, Leo. I haven't had a chance to try it yet over 3G.
I haven't called anybody with it myself. But
who calls anybody anymore?
I know. I haven't made a phone call in years.
Yeah, no.
What are you talking about? It doesn't
matter. And also with Google Voice, you get text messaging, obviously, free text messaging.
Right. You know, and this is nice because it does see your, it goes through your contact list and shows up in the Skype. Let me see if I can get up. Image of this here, if I can. It goes. Where is that? Where is that? I know it's here somewhere. There it is. I gotta find the camera. So this is Skype. It's got. You see, these are my Skype client. You know, contacts. But this is all my phone contacts from my phone book. You can do events, and it runs, by the way, all the time in the background. So it's always on.
There it is. There you have it.
Fring is still around. This was the wonky choice for people who didn't have Skype. And Fring is now doing one penny calls. So they're trying to stay relevant in the Android space. I presume that's a penny a minute.
Anybody? Yeah, except that you don't want to set up your payment information. Like, it's cheap enough, but it's like, oh, I have to just set up my whole credit card to pay Fring.
Yeah. Most of us have either credits with Skype or with Google. I have credits with both. Let's talk about market share. Chrome's market share triples.
Number of the week.
Okay, I won't say anything. I thought you... How many numbers do you have?
That's it. That's the only one.
Well, no, he was... Okay, MG was talking about phone penetration, not browser penetration.
I was talking about sales.
The assaults of the numbers, you know, like that.
But I didn't want to say sales. But we can just do it now.
Let's do phone penetration then. What are the numbers on the phone penetration, MG?
Let's see.
They're huge.
The newest ones. Yeah.
Now, this is only on stuff sold in the last quarter. If you take total sales, Apple will still be able to say, oh, no, we have pride of place.
Right.
Total.
Here it is. 32% of sales were for Google, 25% for Apple, 25% for RIM.
Right.
That's 82%. I wonder who those other 18% are. Windows? Nokia.
Yeah.
Nokia.
Windows and Nokia, yeah.
Now, that's in the U.S., right? That's not worldwide because it's very different worldwide.
So is that the first time that Android sales have topped... RIM and Apple
for
in
a full quarter.
I think the key here is RIM. RIM was the one that was still ahead. You know, I think it was last quarter that they officially passed Apple, you know, by various estimates or whatever. But yeah, RIM is the big one now.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's a big milestone for Android.
Yeah.
There's in January, great story, they had only 14%, and now they're, and BlackBerry had 34, iPhone 32. And so now you've got Android up to what did I say, 35%?
32%. There's a great story in Newsweek about Android. Dan Lyon at Newsweek, but Andy Rubin has some really good quotes just about the messiness of Android and the fragmentation and the multiple handsets versus the iPhone kind of controlled experience.
And Andy Rubin, who was the guy behind Android.
Right. And the guy behind Danger. He started Danger and then Android. So, yeah, that's a big milestone for Android.
So he's saying he doesn't like the fragmentation, that that's a problem?
No, he's saying that it's that Android's evolution is messy, right?
It is.
And the fragmentation is part of it.
It's called open source.
Right. It's open source. And so there's lots of different developers and lots of different manufacturers all contributing to it. And that's just sort of the evolution is a little messier. But that's what it is right now.
Would you say the evolution of Windows was equally messy?
No.
No, well, Windows wasn't open source.
Yeah.
True, but it was many.
You know what it is? It's the new iterative model.
Yes.
And that's what's changed entirely in the entire software industry. That's that thing you were talking about with Facebook. We don't know what it is. We'll know when we get there. And Android's kind of the same thing. It's iterating. Whereas Windows was never that was the pre-iterative stage of software development where you created something that was you released full blown. This is done.
Yeah.
And if you iterate, it's in versions.
Google defines a list of capabilities that a phone has to have in order to carry the Google and the Google brand. I'm not sure about the Android brand. So that's their way of sort of communicating to manufacturers, like the phone needs to do these things, have these compatibilities in order for you to have, you know, our name on them. I think they could maybe they could do a little bit better in that respect. They could maybe, you know, use their weight in terms of like here, you know, using our label to make some phones be maybe a little more consistent if the fragmentation gets worse. Mm-hmm. But that was interesting to me. I didn't realize that was the case.
Well, it's certainly a challenge, right? I mean, if you're trying to appeal to consumers, it's the same challenge Google TV will face. Complexity is always bad for sales. On the other hand, we like choice. So, you know, it's kind of choice kind of means complexity. You know, and Apple's got it simple. It's very straightforward. One SKU. But you don't have much choice. Google's responding to Oracle's lawsuit. Oracle suing Google over the use of Java for the Android phones. I Think in Gadgets summary says it all. Quote, Google says Android didn't infringe on any of Oracle's patents. And even if it does, those patents are invalid and or unenforceable for a variety of reasons anyway. So, you know, shove it.
Yeah, this whole thing is getting really messy. Everyone is basically suing everyone. Someone had a good chart yesterday. I forget where it was exactly, but it's like connecting all the arrows from, you know, Motorola to Google to Apple. Everyone's suing one another. I think Motorola today is suing Apple on like 50 different counts for patent infringement. Microsoft is suing Motorola. It's just a nightmare. I mean, this is what they're all trying to, you know, get into now. There was talk that Microsoft might be you know, kind of not directly going after Android, but going after partners who aren't building Windows Phone 7 phones and suing them if they're using Android, because they're saying, well, yeah, Android may be free, but you have to pay us basically a patent fee to use any of these features. So, you know, maybe you should come with us and not think about Android. The whole thing is a nightmare right now.
Here's something your Germans will like. This is from Gizmodo. A murder captured by... By the Google, can this be possible? By the Google Street View car?
No, the dead bodies were just there.
Yeah, they got rid of them pretty quick, I think. But yeah, they were up there.
This is in Rio.
Yeah, isn't that horrible?
Good Lord! Maybe it's not a murder. They say maybe this one in Rio is probably a hit and run.
I don't understand how the Google car got so close to a body laying out in the street like that. I mean, you would think that it would be surrounded by police cars.
Yeah.
Must have just happened.
Yeah, but the body's covered.
Oh, no, it's covered in plastic. Yeah, yeah. Well, they have a different standard in some of these countries.
There's another great story that is up on the, I don't know if it's up on the Facebook, the friend feed, but it's up on the rundown. Which is a view of the value of Street View in other ways, that you imagine that Street View content were used for games.
Huh.
And so now you go from Grand Theft Auto in a made-up world to the real world. You go through the real Times Square.
Right. It's like that video that was on YouTube, the HTML5 demo video where they took a song and you would enter where you lived, and then it would show street views of where you lived.
So you you go through this real world view, and it also speculated that there'll be software to cut out people, which Street View is looking to do anyway because of the Germans, and so it becomes more of a sanitized but real world. My joke is the Germans, when they have the pixelated buildings, if you go through that, you'll go to Narnia.
Speaking of creepy, Eric Schmidt says, quote, Google's policy is to get right up to the creepy line and not cross it.
Eric.
Will somebody please pull the plug on Eric Schmidt? He's being interviewed and asked about a Google implant. And that's when Eric says, well, I think implants would cross the creepy line. Wow.
Why does he keep saying this stuff? I mean, it's just like, just stop.
It just makes me want to interview him. That's all.
I'm supposed to see him. This could probably get messed up. I'm supposed to see him Friday for my book.
Oh, I hope you get to talk to him. This is an interview with Atlantic editor James Bennett at the Washington Ideas Forum. Schmidt actually says some, I think, very right on things about Washington, D.C. He says technology can completely change the way government works. Washington is an incumbent protection machine. And he says technology is fundamentally disruptive. Mobile phones and personal technology could be used to record the bills that members of Congress actually read. Yeah, that'll happen. Sure. Just, put that thing on me and then determine what stimulus funds were successfully spent. It's true. Information is a chance to reinvent government. But
that's a Gov 2.0 pitch.
Gov 2.0, yeah. But
he's also saying, when I asked him about this at Aspen Institute, summer ago, and about this kind of disruption, and he said, look at the bailouts. It all went to the old industries. Nothing went to developing the future.
Right. America's research universities, says Eric Schmidt, are the envy of the world. We have 90% of the top researchers in the world. We also have a bizarre policy of training people, then kicking them out by not giving them visas. Something Silicon Valley's always been, ringing the bell on, those H-1B visas. China, he says, China governs like a large industrial company. It wants to maximize its cash flow, wants to maximize its internal and external demand. All of the interesting new ideas, like doubling down on solar tech, can be understood as a business expansion. It sounds like a good interview. I hope you do get to talk to him.
Yeah,
he's in rare form.
He's an amazing smart guy. He's always challenging. He's amazing,
and he's willing to talk.
Yeah,
which a lot of people are not willing to do. All right, we're going to wrap this puppy up. We'll get our tool tip and number of the week in just a bit. MG Siegler, let me let you go because you probably have other things to do. I want to thank you for being here.
It's great to have you on.
Thanks.
Just love MG.
Thanks, MG.
Writes for TechCrunch, techcrunch.com. He's Paris Lemon on all the social networks. And we really got to come back soon, okay?
Yeah, anytime. Thanks a lot, guys.
Really appreciate it. And now it's time for Gina's tip of the week.
This is a really simple Google Instant tip. Last week, I think right after the show, Google announced that they added a few more keyboard shortcuts to Google Instant. You can navigate up and down, not only up and down the drop-down of suggestions, but up and down the results when you get them, and then you can hit enter to go to them. So you can basically search Google now and then go to the result that you want without ever touching the mouse, which is pretty cool. So it's just after you do a search, I'm going to do it on google.com. As you do a search, you select the Google Instant suggestion that you want, hit enter to get your results, and then you'll see a little blue arrow on the left-hand side of the search results, and you can use your up and down arrow keys to move it. And then when it's on the link that you want, you hit enter, and it zips you right there.
Cool. Oh, that's what it is. I couldn't figure out what the blue arrow was.
Yep.
What is that? What's that doing? What's that all about? Cool. Any other keys? Where do they document this stuff?
It's buried in some, help.py file somewhere,
help.py, I love it.
Yeah, it's always like some,
support.py.
Yeah. but they did an announcement about it. It's a pretty small addition, but it's really nice. It's nice for people.
They're
also showing previews of the pages too soon, right?
That's going to be
So some people, they are showing previews. And I think Instant within the Chrome bar is also, there was some rumblings about it. One of the early dev versions is showing up. So, because this is the thing, it's annoying. You still have to, navigate to google.com to do your search, which none of us do.
None of us do.
Right.
One other little tidbit that I just put on the list right before the show was that one analyst is saying that Google Instant is already improving Google advertising results, and I haven't figured out exactly how.
How would they know that, I wonder?
That's what I wonder, too. They upped their revenue projections because of it.
Well, if you type slowly enough, I guess you see a lot more advertisements, you know? So, you know, I type Leo, and now I'm seeing the horoscope ads for AOL, and then I'm going to type, I guess you'd see more ads. Your number of the week, Mr. J.
I'm getting another one out since you stole the first one.
No, we didn't say it. Go ahead. We just started.
No, that was the 36%. That was it. That's all right. I got another one. Oh, so man. there was what some people see as a real puff piece on Mark Zuckerberg's COO, Sheryl Sandberg, in the New York Times this weekend. I thought it was actually a very interesting story. But it said in there that there are 200 ex-Googlers working at Facebook.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
1,600 employees. That's a very high percentage.
Wow. There's 1,600 employees and 200 of them, 1 in 8?
That's what they said.
Are Googlers.
That's amazing.
Value transfer. Don't be evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But that's, I think a lot of the great people like Paul Buchheit and Brett Taylor was Dave Recordon a Googler? I think he was.
He was at Six Apart.
Six Apart. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But if this means that they're going to help Facebook sort of embrace the open web more,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
great. Keep going.
It spreads the culture. Google creates a culture for the internet and the culture expands. It's not a bad thing. So that's my number.
Good number. My tool of the week is something actually Matt Cutts announced. It's been around for a little while as the Google URL shortener is now open to the public. You can use this for yourself. It's GOO.GL. Yeah, it's shorter. It will have stats. It's very Bitly-like, really, in some of its features, but it's not as complete in the feature set. But it will have stats. It will. You can see I haven't used it, but we'll show you when it was created, how many clicks it received. And you can see clicks for 2 hours, the day, the week, the month, and all time.
And you're not beholden to Libya. Did you see what just happened?
BIT.ly is registered through the Libyan.
And so two sex-related URL shorteners just got shut off under Sharia law.
Oh, really?
Yeah, VB.ly, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Violet Blue service, and then was there another one? The Google shortener, too, will give you a QR code. Yay, geeks.
Yeah, automatically, which I really, really like. Yeah, that's actually a nice feature of it.
So what's the .gl?
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's the land known as Google.
I come from the land of Google.
If anyone deserves their own domain, it ain't it them.
There's the twit.tv QR code. I like that. I was thinking for a while, many years ago, I wanted to start a service called Your Daily Action Item, DAI.ly. And I like the domain name. And then I realized I'm going to have to go to Muammar Gaddafi to get it.
GL is Greenland.
Greenland. See, that's safe.
That's safe.
They're never going to say.
Unless it melts, but that's safe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I always get that confused. Greenland is the one that's icy, and Iceland's the one that's green. It's very, it's not right. There we go. There you have it. There you go. It is this week in Google, this portion of This Week in Google, brought to you by my good friend. I just want to give him a little plug here, Tom Johnson, who does MailRoute. MailRoute.info. It's the best anti-spam engine for people who have their own domains. If you use Gmail, you don't need it. I'm telling you right now. I'll just save you some time. But if you have your own domain, as I do, leoville.com, MailRoute is fantastic.
What was the number again, Leo? One more time. How much spam you got last year?
I don't have it here. It's somewhere. It's something
more than a million pieces.
It was a million pieces of spam that it blocked that never even went on my server. And we got Tom Merritt using it for his Subbrilliant. He has Subbrilliant.net. He's had it for years. He created a mail server and everything. He could never use it because there was so much spam on it. So we've got it going through MailRoute. And already, I think I just saw the first stats have come out from Subbrilliant. And it was like 98% spam. So you get spam protection. You get virus protection, too, because, of course, you know, that's often attached to the email. Disaster recovery with their mailbagging service. It is a really neat service. If you have your own domain, the simple test is if you can change your MX record or you know someone who can, you can use MailRoute, and I think you will like it. $2 per seat with a minimum of 20 a month, but if you go to MailRoute.info and sign up as a Twit listener, you'll get 10% off for life. I've been using it for 6 years now, and I love it. Mailroute.info. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. I thank Jeff Jarvis for being here, the author of What Would Google Do?
Always a pleasure. I flew back just to do this.
Flew back. Now he's going straight back to Germany. Buzzmachine.com is his great website. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org. Thank you for being here also, Gina. And again, thanks to MG Siegler and Becky Worley for joining us. Becky's going to be here in just a minute with Tech News Today. Our daily news, tech news coverage begins usually around 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific at live.twit.tv. Becky will be here. I think Tom is in New York, actually. He'll be calling in from New York. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. You can watch us do our thing every Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That would be 2000 UTC at live.twit.tv. Chat with us at irc.twit.tv. And, of course, you can download the show after the fact by going to twit.tv/twig, T-W-I-G. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google.